Boker Tov, everybody. Okay. 401 in Israel, wherever you might be. And a pleasure to see everybody. Our class 24 and our Torah in Motion ongoing, look at the closer look at the Siddur, every week, a word or two. It reminds me, I hope people don't mind if I'm going as slowly as I go and different things. And I don't know, maybe one time we'll pick up. But I remember when I came to Yeshiva at HaKotel, so Rav Hadari, I don't know if people know the name, Rav Hadari was the Rosh Yeshiva. And he was more into Machshava than into Gemara. He wasn't your classical Rosh Yeshiva. He was a very close student of Rav Kook. I don't know directly, but he was into, of course, the thought of Rav Kook. So he would speak every Friday night. I arrived in Yeshiva in February. I went for like a year and a half. We finished the year. So I arrived in February. So he was talking on Kiddush. So I think he was in February. He was up to Yom HaShishi. So, from Vayihi Er, Vayihi Boker, wherever he started in Elulzman. And I don't know, by the end of the year, maybe he was at the Vayichu HaShemayim V'aretz. I'm not quite sure. Anyways, that Baruch Hashem, there's lots to learn, lots to discuss, and a springboard. Somebody suggests, I think, we'll dedicate the learning for the situation in Ukraine, to pray for peace, and that somehow our learning should bring merit to the world, that we should hear good news. Okay, I just want to pick up on a couple pieces from last week, which will probably take us, more than 2 minutes. But number one, this Rosh Chodesh, we're talking about Rosh Chodesh, right? So Rosh Chodesh Adar and the Korbanot. Of course, when it's Rosh Chodesh, you don't just say the Korban Tamid, as we do every day. You say the Korbanot of Rosh Chodesh. So last week, so Rosh Chodesh, we mentioned, is a woman's holiday, right? Whatever that means. And that's why the women of the wall go on Rosh Chodesh, and and we never really explained the link. I imagine if anyone wants to call out, why is Rosh Chodesh a woman's holiday? Well, what's very nice, but why?
No,
that's what they do, what they do. They don't sew. I don't know how many women sew anyways, but why is it that Rosh Chodesh became quote unquote a special holiday for women, where the custom developed they don't do work on Rosh Chodesh? Right, because of the Chet Egel. It's a reward for Chet Egel. The woman didn't participate in Chet Egel. So I don't know, the Levim, the men Levim didn't count, I guess. They got another reward. But the Chet Egel, that's very nice. What's the connection? You always have to ask when the Midrash or people say things, these are very nice, but what in the world is the connection between Chet Egel and Rosh Chodesh?
Maybe the Avodah Zarah angle?
Want to elaborate?
Because back then people worshiped the sun, moon, and stars, so maybe celebrating Rosh Chodesh.
That's very interesting. Thank you. I had never heard that explanation before. I don't know, did people worship the moon? For sure people worship the sun. I believe, what's his name? Leon Cass, in his fantastic book on understanding Genesis, he discusses that's why the sun was created on day four. In order to minimize the role of the sun. In other words, he's saying we don't think of it that way, but sort of a polemic against the ancient world that worshiped the sun, was the sun was the main god. So God wanted to say, no, God controls the sun. The sun wasn't even created until day four, whatever. But I've never heard that people worship the moon, but they probably did. That's an interesting answer, right? So because the moon had a little bit of a form of idolatry, perhaps, so they gave it to a woman who didn't do idolatry. Okay. Good. And I was thinking of other reasons, but I'm always glad you learned the most from your students. Thank you. Any other reasons why Rosh Chodesh might be, what the connection is between not participating in the sin of the golden calf and giving the woman the reward, so to speak, of celebrating Rosh Chodesh being their particular holiday? So I thought two things related to the timing. That, first of all, what is, according to Rashi, what was the problem with Chet Egel? Moshe said, I'm coming back in 40 days, whatever. And they miscalculated the day. They got it a day wrong, and that's what Aaron was trying to stall them. Aaron figured, if I could just stall them for 6 hours, I can just get them, for a few minutes, we'll be okay. But it didn't happen. So it was a miscalculation of time. Rosh Chodesh, of course, is all about timing. It's all about Mekadesh Yisrael has my name. We sanctify the time. So it had to do with the appreciation of time. And so perhaps that's a connection, perhaps not. Maybe you don't like that. I also think there's sort of the natural connection between a woman's bodily cycle and the moon. There's sort of a 30-day cycle of renewal. And so I think there is some kind of connection there in terms of timing. And then I saw in the name of the Lubavitcher Rebbe that because the moon, you know, is dark, you can't see the moon, right? The way from our perspective on Earth, right before the new moon means the first time you can see it. You haven't been able to see it recently. So the moon represents the idea of having faith. That's kind of what Yocheva was saying, perhaps a little bit in a different angle. The moon is the faith that even though there's, you know, like Anne Frank said, even though the world is dark, we believe there'll be light and there'll be hope. So Rosh Chodesh represents again that renewal of life, and there was the woman who had much greater faith than the men. Bizchut Nashim Sidkaniyot Nigalum Mitzrayim, because of the merit of the woman, and we went through it on the Kiyur a few weeks ago, that there was the woman who seduced her husbands, the men didn't want to have any children, who wants to bring children into this lousy world? And the woman said, no, we have to, and it's Yocheved who went to her parents and told them, have children, all those famous Midrashim we've learned. So because the woman had the greater faith, and that's represented by the faith in the moon returning. I don't know if you have other explanations, I'd be happy to hear them, but that's because it's very nice, but you have to figure out what's the relationship between Cheta Egel and the moon. So we're talking either timing or fate, some connection. Okay, that's one point. Then I want to pick up on one more thing, then we'll get to Hallel. The sacrifices on Rosh Chodesh. So what korbanot do we bring? Who wants to say? I don't want anybody. What korban do we bring on Rosh Chodesh? So every day, the korban tamid, we bring a sheep in the morning and a sheep in the afternoon. We discussed last week, a keves achat aseh b'boker, keves hasheni taseh ben harbayim. We bring one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Consistency, we discussed last week, why that's made perhaps the most important verse in the Torah, either the importance of korbanot, the importance of consistency, day in, day out, etc. But what's the korban on Rosh Chodesh? Right. Shnei parim. Ayel Echad and Shiva Kvasim. Two bulls, one ram and seven sheep, and a Seir Lechatad and a goat for a sin offering. Does that sound at all familiar? What I call two, one and seven. Shnei parim, ayel, parim, ayel echad, b'shivak basim, b'nei shanat rimim, u'min chatam v'nizkeyam, right? Where does 217 and 1? The 217 is korban olah. Means nobody eats it. It's the entire animal is not mamash the entire animal, but anything that's used from the animal is put on the altar and burnt, the korban olah. This is how Parshat Vayikra opens up. We'll read tomorrow. Parshat Vayikra opens with the korban olah. That's the one korban that nobody is allowed to eat, not kohanim, and for sure not non-kohanim. So all these korbanot on Yontif, all the korbanot musaf are all korbanot olot. That's what they are. They're, I don't know what they call in English, a fire offer. I forget how they translate a burnt offering. That's what they say in English, a korban olah. And, then we bring a sa'ir lechatad, a goat as a sin offering. A sin offering means the kohanim get to eat it. Now, we'll get to what the sin is in a moment. What's the sin? But, 2, 1, and 7. So the truth of the matter is, I know that's the same korban we bring on Pesach and on Shavuot. In other words, Rosh Chodesh, Pesach, and Shavuot have the same korban. It's also very, very similar to the korban we bring on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeret, which is 1, 1, and 7. One par, one ayil, and shivak basim. So basically, all the biblical holidays have 2, 1, and 7, or 1, 1, and 7. So you see right away, without knowing anything, you see right away that Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeret are connected. Now you begin to understand why the Chazan Yigadol, and why we wear a kittel on Shmini Atzeret, and why it has that, and we say Yisker, it's got that mood of Yom Kippur, which is why we've mentioned many times, Simchas Torah doesn't work on Shmini Atzeret. I hate to say it, even though it's a big mitzvah to live in Israel, Shmini Atzeret and Simchas Torah don't go together. Simchas Torah only began in the Galut, that's why it began. Second day, it just doesn't mesh. The moods are so different. No, that's for another time. What can I say? But so you see Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeret of 1, 1, and 7. Rosh Chodesh, Pesach, and Shavuot is 2, 1, and 7. 2 Parim, 1 Ayil, and Shivak Basim. So you see, that's the Yontif. Those are the happy holidays. The more Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeret, we'll see in a moment by Hallel, it's a little bit more subdued, a little bit more serious, you know, Yom Hadin. Pesach, Shavuot, we'll get to Sukkot in a second. We left that one out. So that's two and seven. So you see already Rosh Chodesh is like a real Yontif. And we discussed last week, it is in the Beit HaMikdash. Rosh Chodesh is a holiday in the Beit HaMikdash. So Rosh Chodesh goes with Pesach and Shavuot. Sukkot, what do we do on Sukkot? So Sukkot is, the Parim is its own cycle, 13 to 7, because we bring 70 Parim, because there's 70 nations of the world. Sukkot is a universal holiday. Sukkot Shalom, the Sukkah of peace. It's a universal. There should be peace in the world. That's what we pray for on Sukkot, everywhere. So, Sukkot has the 70 Parim, but the Ayil gets, instead of one, it's two. And the Kvasim, how many sheep do we bring every day of Sukkot? The 7 days of not Shmini Atzeret. But what, how many kvasim do we bring? How many sheep? Or maybe I shouldn't have asked, I'm not there. It's in the Chumash. 14. We bring two ayils. I don't know, ayilim, ayilot, whatever. Two, an ayil is a male, by the way. It's an ayil always has to be a male. A shlamim can be a male or a female. A different korbanot, male, female. The korban Pesach has to be a male. But, okay, we're getting into Vayikra, all these laws. So on Sukkot, it's double. Shnei Aylim and 14 Kvasim. Why? We discussed it before this. I heard from Rabbi Liebtag originally, because Sukkot is a double holiday, right? Our holidays have two cycles. There's Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, the Shalosh Regalim. That we all know. We celebrate the Shalosh Regalim as one unit, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. And then we also know we have the high holidays, Pesach, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot also. Sukkot is Shmini Atzeret. Sukkot is part of the, you know, so many holidays in September, you know, like, and we know it's not a coincidence. Sukkot is 5 days after Yom Kippur. The Lulav is our celebration that we had a successful Yom Kippur. That's how the Midrash portrays it. So Sukkot is the end of Pesach and Sukkot. It's a third of the Shalosh Regalim. It's also the third of the high holidays. So Sukkot is a double holiday. It's two holidays in one. So therefore, Sukkot, you have to double the sacrifices. You have to have two Elim and 14 Kvasim. It's two holidays in one. Now you know why Sukkot is Zman Simchatenu. Why do we call it time of our happiness? Two holidays in one. It's the happiest time of the year because we mix it in all together. Okay, so that's a little bit the Korbanot. But see, again, we never do this stuff because, you know, it's boring and who pays attention to this stuff? And we're too busy learning the Medrash that Avram smashed his father's idols to actually read what it says in the Chumash. So, you just read the Psukim in the Chumash and it's this obvious how the Torah, you know, if the Torah is presenting the same numbers and the same Korbanot, obviously they're relating these holidays. So it's clear Rosh Chodesh is like Pesach and Shavuot, and it's clear Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeret are connected, and it's clear Sukkot is a special holiday. Like, wow, that's like in its own category of its own. All the holidays have one thing in common. Seir Echad L'Chatat, Sirizim Echad L'Chatat. We bring a goat for a sin offering. Why? What's the sin? I stumped everybody. Oh, Tova, what's the sin? Gonna pick on my sister in Israel. She's busy, you know, okay.
Isn't it Cheda Egel?
Oh, that's the woman. We already went through Cheda Egel.
I know, but
that's an Egel. That's not a Seir. The Gemara says the Para Aduma is a Kapar. It's an atonement for the Cheda Egel. The Egel grows into a Par. But, no. So, what's the sin of the Seir?
Cheda of Yosef.
Well, I'm sorry.
Selling Yosef, maybe?
Excellent. Selling Yosef. Beautiful. Of course, what did the brothers do? They dipped his coat in a Seir and they sent it to their father. Look at the, do you recognize the coat by any chance? So disgusting, right? Callous, cruel, right? It's Nechama Leibowitz, you know, I had the pleasure of, I've mentioned many times, of being, learning with her when I was in the Gris Kollel in NYU. So one of the first, I remember how she would just point out, one of the first things to point out, what do the brothers do after they sell Yosef? What's the next verse in the Torah?
They have a meal.
They have lunch.
Torah doesn't care they had lunch. Torah doesn't tell us every time Avraham Avinu had a meal. Torah doesn't tell us any biographical information. The Torah only tells us moral information. Every verse and word in Torah is moral information. Torah couldn't care less about what they wore and who cooked. And when the Torah says, Avram, the Tzara, go cook and bake for the, that's the Torah's saying, unbelievable. You throw your brother in the pit. And then you can go down and eat lunch. Unbelievable. Anyways, so the Seirizim Lechatat, of course, is Yosef. We have to forget about Yom, because that's why we end up in Egypt. All our holidays celebrate Zecher Liyetziat Mitzrayim. We left Egypt. When we left Egypt, we went there in the first place because of what we did to Yosef. So every holiday, it has to have a Seirizim Lechatat. We have to have that reminder. Now, we don't accept, when don't we bring a sin offering? On Shabbat. There's no sin offering on Shabbat. Shabbat is Shnei, the Musaf is two more sheep. Instead of bringing two sheep like we do every day on Shabbat, we bring four. The Korban Musaf, we bring two more. And therefore, Rav Schachter told us, right? It's unbelievable. Why I never knew this. But you know, when you daven on Yontif, you know, in the Machzor, whatever you call it, in the Siddur. So on Shabbos, you add the words in brackets, right? Everybody knows that, right? They have the, you know, you don't say Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanim, you say Mekadesh HaShabbat Yisrael Vazmanim. So one of the additions, what do we add for Shabbat? Ba'ahava, right? We'll say it this year. The first day of Pesach is on Chagamatzot, so we say be ahava. What do you mean ahava? Why is there only love on Shabbat? So that's what I remember Rav Schachter told us, because there's no Korban Chatat, there's no sin offering on Shabbat. Shabbat is the day of pure love between God and the Jewish people. Yontif has a little bit of something negative. Because all our yontifs really are only a result because the brothers sold Yosef. The simple pshat on Torah, we'll leave aside God's promise to Abraham. How does that play into it that you'll be persecuted? That's irrelevant. I mean, it's irrelevant for the way we understand it. God works in his own plans. Human beings have their own choices. And had we not sold Yosef, we wouldn't have had the whole Egypt. So therefore, we have to remind us. So that's a little bit of just the korbanot. Every day is the korban tamid, a keves achat asah b'boker. We'll get to in one moment why a sheep. But and then on Shabbos, we add some more musaf. We add a little bit more. And then, of course, on the Yamim Tovim, we add musaf and Rosh Chodesh also. And that addition is much different. 2, 1, and 7, or 1, 1, and 7. 2 parim, 1 ayil, 7 kvasim, and we throw in a seir echad lechatat. Okay, so that's a little bit just to finish up the korbanot section when we do Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. Now I want to discuss, we don't finish up, we were talking about challah last week, challah on Rosh Chodesh. So let me open up the sugya in Erchim. It's very fun. Okay. So I mentioned the discussion. It's a short discussion. It's like, 30 lines, maybe not even. It's half an amud, like a quarter. In Daf Yomi, it's like less than a quarter of the daf. You know, it's very little. How much the whole discussion of when we say halal. Interesting enough. There is a discussion in Masechet Pesachim about halal. What halal means, the psukim, we say, that's because we say halal on Pesach night, of course. But that's, I'm talking about when we say halal, not the interpretation of halal. That's, you want to know what halal is all about. So that's, that's mainly in Pesachim. But Erchin, in Gemara, Erchin is where there's discussion of when we say halal and why we say halal. So what in the world is it doing in Masechet Erchin? So first of all, we have to know what is Masechet Erchin. And there are different ways to pronounce it, I think. What is Masechet Erchin even talking about? Okay, anybody want to venture a guess? I don't want to, you know. Okay, so let's go to our share screen here. I hope I'm in the right place. Okay, we're going to go to the Mishnah in Erchin. Okay, so Erchin, talk Erech. It's the end of Vayikra, so we're really bored. You know, Vayikra we can put up with, you know, Korban at the beginning. We don't know. By Parshat Bechukotai. And the Torah goes on, if a person makes a korban, he says, I want to assess, I want to give my value to the temple. And so the Torah is a whole description. And so maybe it's a non-egalitarian description. If you're a man, you pay this much. If you're a woman, you pay this much. Under five, between 5 and 50, all the different age groups. The Torah delineates how much money you have to pay. So the Mishnah says, Ein be'erchim pachot misala. Below yeter al chamishim sela, the minimum amount is a sela, whatever that's worth, 4 dinarim, whatever that is, whatever, just to put it into, perspective, not that it really works, a sela is, I believe, 764 prutot, if my math is correct. It's 4 dinarim, which is then for a dinar is 6 ma'ot, which is 2 pundions, which is 2 isarim, which is 8 prutot. So if you add up all those numbers, 8, 2, 2, 4, 6, whatever, I think it works out to 764. A sell is 764 prutot. A prutot is the amount of money you're not to lose when you get married. When you, the ring has to be worth a minimum of a Shabbat prutat. The seller was like the highest amount. A prutat is very inexpensive today. I don't know. It's a few dollars. Maybe a few cents. I'm not sure what it's probably a few cents. It has to do with the price of silver, but that's not our discussion. So anyways, that's what the Mishnah says. Then the Mishnah gets in what we call a kovetz. A kovetz means, a tangent. A tangent. I like kovetzim. A tangent because we're talking about upper and minimum and maximum. Okay, let's discuss everything else that has a minimum and a maximum. So the Mishnah says, "Ein petach toeh pachot mishiva v'lo yeter shiva sarah." This is talking about a woman who's Anita. We're not going to go into the details. There's a mistake. She doesn't know if she was Anita, Azaba, things that don't apply today. So it's going to be a minimum of 7 days, maximum of 17 days. Nega, if you have a nega, how do we call it? Boil, whatever, you know, the person has sarat or something. You have to put them outside the camp. So the minimum is 1 week. The maximum is 3 weeks. The minimum amount of months in a year that have to be mu'ubar, pregnant months, 30 days, right? Either 29, have to have a minimum of 4 months a year that are 30 days and not more than 8. Shtei alechem, and then how often you eat. So it's a whole thing. So then akatan, this is interesting, a minor child, his bris can be anywhere from the 8th to the 12th day. That's cool. Well, why is it bris on the 12th day? We're not talking about a sick baby, healthy baby. Well, why would the bris of somebody be, it could be the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, or 12th. These are like these questions they ask, you know, how can one brother be younger and his bar mitzvah is earlier, right? Adar Beit, everybody, twins, you know, one's born at the 30th of Adar, you know, they can switch around. You can be born less, have your bar mitzvah later. Well, or forget brothers, right?
Ben Ashmashos.
Correct. The person's brain born at twilight, and we're not sure what day. So if let's say you're born on Tuesday evening, as it's getting dark, it's after sunset but before darkness. So we'll do the bris on Wednesday. So we're not sure. Maybe it's not Tuesday. So that's very nice, except if you're born on Friday night. So if you're born on Friday night, that Dr. Gewirtz spoke about this, the Chatam Sofer Tshuva. How do you do that? What minutes will qualify? But that's quite fascinating. But whenever that time is, so you're born on Friday night, like after candle lighting, let's say, whatever, after sunset, but it's not really Shabbos yet. They're not fully Shabbos. So the bris, it can't be on Friday. That's too early. Can't be on Shabbos because you can only do a bris on the 8th day on Shabbos. It's got to be on Sunday. No, what if Yontif is Friday? What if Yontif is Wednesday night? That's the 12th. You're living in Chutzlar, it's Yontif or it's Rosh Hashanah. Wednesday is Rosh Hashanah. So the baby's born Wednesday evening. So you can't do the bris Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. So you got to do the bris on Sunday. That's day 12. Anyways, let's get back to our topic. Ein potach, so you can't blow. You blow every day. They blew shofar in the Beit HaMikdash every single day. 21 tekiyot. 3 when they opened up the gates in the morning. Tekiyah, shofarim tekiyah, or trua tekiyah, whatever. And then they did 9 at the korbanot. Now I'm forgetting already the 21. Oh yeah, 9 at the korban tamid shel boker and 9 at the korban tamid shel bein abrim. They blew shofar when they brought the korbanot. They a minimum of 21, a maximum of 48. That was on Sukkos. Sukkos is the holiday par excellence. On Friday on Sukkos, whatever, whole calculation why they blew the shofar 48 times. We, of course, on Rosh Hashanah, our custom is about 100 times. But, you know, really only have to build only 30 times, 9 times, 30 times. But in the temple, every day, minimum of 21, maximum of 48. Then the Gemara says like this, you have flutes. When they brought the korban, the Levim used to sing and they used to play musical instruments sometimes. So when you have the flutes, you can't have an orchestra with less than 2 flutes and more than 6. Funny, like interesting. I'm sorry. No. What's on Naval? I'm sorry. Naval's a harp. No, I forget now. Oh, sure. I should know this. A chalil is a flute. I didn't even put it in the English. Let me do the English. See, I'm sorry. Now I'm forgetting. What does it say? Ein pochim. 2 lyres. I don't know what that is. More than 6 flutes. Okay. And then the Mishnah says, and when you, 12 yom, B'shana ha'chalil makil lifnei ha'mizbeach. 12 days a year they used to blow the flutes in the temple. 12 days a year. What happens 12 days a year? B'shchitat Pesach Rishon, when they brought the Korban Pesach. When they brought the Korban Pesach, if you couldn't bring it, if you were Tameh, we can bring it a month later. So when they slaughtered the Korban, and the Mishnah in Pesachim describes how they used to say halal. As they shechted the Korban, they're beautiful, and they would say halal as they're bringing the Korban Pesach. Yontav Rishon Shel Pesach, first day of Pesach. Yontav, first day of, there's only one day of Yontav. This is in Israel. The Mishnah is written in Israel. And the 8 days of Sukkot, we know we say holidays for 8 days, so that is 12. Pesach, Shavuot, 2, Sukkot, 8, Shmini Atzeret, that's 10, plus the 2 Korban Pesach. So the Gemara wants to know why. I'm actually going to do something I don't normally do. I'm going to do it in the real Gemara. That's the wrong real Gemara. Where's the real Gemara? And the Shas Vilna, the Vilna Shas. So here it is. So the Gemara wants to know, I hope you don't mind, tell me if you do, I can go back to the English. So the Gemara wants to know why. Well, what's special about these days? So the Gemara says, these are the 18 days, it's at the bottom, at the two dots. I don't know if I can paint it out here, maybe I'll go back. There are the 18 days that people say hello. There are 18 days a year that people say hello, if you live outside of Israel. And of course, that's the 10 days there, or that we don't say it, and they're not bringing a Korban Pesach on the 8 days of Hanukkah. On the 8 days of Hanukkah. So the Gemara wants to know, The Gemara wants to know, very nice, why do we say Hallel on all of the days of Sukkot and not on all the days of Pesach? What's the reason we were all taught in kindergarten, right? Why were we taught in kindergarten? Why we don't say Hallel on Pesach, on Chol HaMoed Pesach? Why?
Because the Mitzrim died.
Of course, everybody learned that because the Mitzrim died. Masa Yadai told me Beyam Vatam Omrim Shira. My creations, the Egyptians were God creations, also great in the image of God, are drowning, and you're singing songs of Hallel. It's a beautiful, very liberal, beautiful idea. It's a very difficult midrash. I don't know. I every morning when I go to shul, they say Az Yashir. How the Egyptians drowned the sea. We see that 365 days a year. Exactly what's, it's not so simple. And let's take a quick look. Oh, that's the wrong place. That's not where I want to go. Let me share my screen again. And let's see what the Gemara says. The Gemara doesn't say this. We're all taught this, but, I don't know, Yocheva, you can ask why you were, I don't know what you were taught, in Prospect Park, whatever, why certain things are very proper and certain things are not taught, I have no idea. But, the Gemara says, Shmoni Itzger says, Maishna b'chag damrinan, why do we say it on Sukkot every day? Why not on Pesach? The Gemara gives us a different answer. Kol yuma d'chag chalukim b'korbanotayim. Every day of Sukkot has a different korban. Because the first day they're 13 parim, and the second day they're 12 parim, and the third day they're 11 parim. But Pesach is that same boring korban, 2, 1, and 7. I'm like 13, 13, 2, and 14, 12, 2, and 14, 11, 2, and 14, right? It's different. So first of all, you see the importance of korbanot. You see that korbanot and challah go together. That's the way we praise God. What's Hallel? We're singing to God. Korban is a way to get closer to God. So Korbanot and Hallel are clearly linked. That reason, it is a Midrash. Yes, the Midrash does give that beautiful reason. But that was given only to the angels. That wasn't to human beings. God gets angry at the angels for singing when the Egyptians are drowning. He doesn't get mad at the Jewish people for singing as Yashir. We who suffered, we are, and whatever, collectively who suffered, we have the right to sing when our enemies are destroyed. The angels had no right to sing. That's why the Gemara, it's a very nice midrash, and I do understand why they teach it to us in kindergarten in grade 1. What are going to teach the kids in grade 6? Oh, the korban is different. The kids don't know what the korban, they don't know. Eileen Fasim, it's much easier. Teach the beautiful midrash. So that's what the Gemara says. That's why we don't say it on Pesach. What about Shabbos? Shabbos, different. The korbanot are different than the rest of the week. It's not a moed. That's what we said last week. It's not a moed. Rosh Chodesh is a moed. Rosh Chodesh is a holiday like Pesach and Shavuot. It's a real holiday like in the Beit HaMikdash. Yeah, but you can do malacha. You can do work. So as I said, that's what we said last week. You need both. By the way, and I have to look into this a little bit more, but there are Mefarshim who say that when it's Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, then you have an obligation to say hallel. We should say full hallel, not just half hallel. Our half hallel doesn't really count. It's a minag. We say half hallel on Cholamay. The Gemara doesn't know from half hallel here. Half hallel on Rosh Chodesh. That's like a minag. So, but if Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos come together, so you've got the combination of Isser Malacha and Moed. So maybe you have to say hello. Others say no. And our practice is not to. We don't say full hello. But that's just an interesting idea. If you put two and two together, you can do that. So then the Gemara wants to know. And of course, it's for, what about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Why don't we say hello on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? It's a Moed. It's a holiday and it's forbidden to work. Why don't we say, anybody know? Anybody want to say why we don't say hello on
Rosh Hashanah?
Like
Hasharet. Again, see here, it's the angels again. Here the Gemara does quote the angels, not unlike by the, you know, by the Yam. Ribono Shalola Mihnema in Yisrael Amrim Shira Lefanecha. The angels are complaining, right? The angels by the Yamsu said, why are you drowning the Egyptians? The Jews also did a Avodah Zarah, right? The angels often, right, when Moshe came to get the Torah, the angels said, what are you giving Torah to man for? The angels are often didn't like man. Man was the competition, sort of, to the angels, right? You have a lot of midrashim like that the angels are complaining to God about human behavior. So here you have it again. These Jewish people, and they come to shul, they pray all day, and they don't even sing your songs of glory. What's wrong with them? So Amarlem, so God told the angels, no, you don't understand. Obviously, this isn't literal. Afshar Melech Yosheva Kisei Adin. Is it possible that the king, God is talking about now himself, is it possible that the king is sitting on the throne of judgment? The book of life and death, who's going to live, mi yichyeh, mi yamut, are open before God. How can people sing? They got to be shaking in their heels. They're sitting, they're nervous, they're crying. They don't know who's going to live and die. Rosh Hashanah is not a time for Hallel. That's a question. There is a din of Simcha. That's a whole other shir. The Rambam writes, Ein bo Simcha Yetera. There's not extra special joy on Rosh Hashanah. That's a whole other subject. It is a happy time. We do have shir. It is a yontif, but a little bit less. We don't say Hallel. That's the Gemara. So now the Gemara says, ooh, but what's missing? Chanukah. Chanukah is not a moed. It's not Aser B'Malacha. It's nothing. It's rabbinic. And yet we say full hallel. We don't say hallel on Pesach, except for the first day. Chanukah, we say hallel. So Gemara says, ooh. So what about Chanukah? De lo hachi. Neither Aser Malacha, nor it's not a Moi. Kamar Mishum Nisa. Such a great miracle happened. When a great miracle happens, we have to say hallel. It's very interesting. Kriyat Yamsuf, seventh day of Pesach. That's not a great miracle. You can think about that. And if anybody has any thoughts at the end of this year, maybe we can discuss it. Right? The Gemara says we say Hallel on Chanukah because there's a great miracle. You're right. By the normal rules of Hallel, we should not say.
Maybe the Shira is the Hallel.
What, on Pesach?
Yeah.
No, we don't say the Shira. That's a minag to say Psukei Dezimra. In other words, our Siddur, when we get to Psukei Dezimra in 6 years, hopefully less, a lot less, but, we get to Az Yashir. It's a minhag. It's very nice. It's what we do. But from the Gemara's perspective, people were not saying as Yashir. That they weren't saying that on the seventh day of Pesach. Anyways, so they had miracles. So the Gemara's Purim. Hey, Purim's coming up. Purim the Ika Nisa. Purim also had a miracle. Lema. Okay. So the first answer, I think, is the most famous answer. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Lepishen Amrim Shirel Nesha Bechutz Laretz. We don't say songs unless a miracle happens in Israel. Now, obviously, Yetzir Mitzrayim happened out of Israel and Shavuos, but that's before we went to Israel. We weren't going to talk about that. But this is a powerful idea that we're only a community in Israel. We can only really praise God. We can only implement the entire Torah. We can only manifest all the national aspects. So Hallel is truncated if you're outside of Israel. You can't say hello. I mean, the Gemara seems to say, Ein Omrim Shira al Nesha B'chutz Laretz. That's pretty wild. Now, does everybody agree with this answer? I'm not sure, because the Gemara is going to give two more answers. Are the two answers, are they complementary or disagreement? That's an interesting question. The Gemara gives two other answers. Anybody know what the two other answers are, why we don't say hello on Purim?
Megillah is the hallow.
That's right. So that's Debbie, like you're saying, the Megillah is hallow. So the Meiri writes, the Meiri writes, if you're stuck on a desert island and you don't have a Megillah, you have to say hallow.
We were still subjects of Achashverosh.
That's answer number three. Excellent. Excellent. Right. So number two is that Kriyatazu Halila. So I love that expression. Kriyatazu Halila. It's such a beautiful Hebrew. The reading of it is its praises, is its halal. Meaning you realize it's a total opposite answer. The first answer is Purim's not such a great miracle. What's Mordechai doing in Chutzlar? Why didn't Mordechai make Aliyah? Right, that's one way to read Megillat Esther. It's a critique of the Jews who stayed behind in Persia. They deserve what they got. They went to the Achashverosh. Well, right, there are different model ways how to read the Megillah, as Aaron Kohler is so beautifully talking about. So Kriyatazu. So the first is Chutzlaretz. We're not going to celebrate the Jewish people for a miracle in Chutzlar, especially in Purim, and perhaps that's part of it. The Gemara doesn't say it, but I would think that's part of it. They have permission to go to Israel. Maybe in the 1400s, in the Middle Ages, you couldn't go to Israel. It's a different story. But in the time of Purim, the Jews could have gone to Israel. Koresh welcomed all the Jews back to Israel, and they didn't go. So we're not going to say hello. The second answer is Purim is so great. We don't just say hello. We read a whole Megillah, like 10 chapters. Whoa, way longer than hello. Like it's a greater hallel. Purim's like the greatest miracle that ever happened. It's greater than Yom Kippur. Purim is Yom Kippurim. Like, so these answers are the total opposite answers. And then answer number three, it's even worse. It's nothing. Nothing happened on Purim. The first answer is Purim is a miracle. Nice things happen, but it happened in Chutz Laretz. We're not going to celebrate. It's a great miracle. It happened in Chutz Laretz. Doesn't count. Second answer is wow. Purim is the most amazing miracle. Everything, wow, look what Mordechai and Esther did. Human being, they didn't even rely on God. Like they did it themselves. That's even greater. The children have grown up. They, on their own, they figured it out. Mi yodeim leikazot, he got the machud, Mordechai tells Esther. Let's do it on ourselves. That's the greatest miracle. When man doesn't just sit back and rely on God, like he did in Egypt. This is the greatest of the great. Purim is the greatest holiday. That's the second answer. And the third answer is Purim is an absolute nothing holiday. It's meaningless. The question is, so why do we have it? Akate Ate Achashverosh. We're still slaves to Achashverosh. And that, of course, is why the 10th chapter of Megillat Esther talks about taxes. But, the Megillah ends on such a downer. Chapter 10 is Achashverosh put more taxes on the people. He raised, it's expensive, the war, got to raise taxes, the economy. We see what's going on now. There's war, how it impacts on the economy. 75,000 people were killed in Shushan Abira, the Megillah says. So it's a big economic problem. So Achashverosh had to raise taxes. What kind of? And he's still the king. They didn't depose him. Nothing happened. There's no story here. So that's of course the question is, so why do we have Purim at all? But that's the third answer. Three totally different answers why we don't say Hallel on Purim. It's like unbelievable. It's a total re-understanding. Each one is totally understanding Purim. I mean, it's not just them. Why don't say Hallel? Why we don't say Hallel tells us how they view the holiday of Purim, which is, I guess, Purim is Nistar. Everything about Purim is hidden. I don't know if anybody's read Yoni Grossman's wonderful, wonderful book on Megillat Starim. I read it in Hebrew. They have it now in English. I believe it's been translated. Yoni Grossman, lots of people quote him. He's phenomenal. He's in the Lonshvut, Gush Etzion. I think he teaches the Bar Ilan. He's written a lot now. He's really coming out with lots of phenomenal stuff. He has a fantastic book. And the whole book is about everything in Purim. Everything in the Megillah is the exact opposite of what you think. Like, that's the whole story. Like, that's how he reads the book. Everything is Nistar, Esther, Hester, Pani. So everything you're reading about, the exact opposite is happening. Like, there's an undercurrent to the whole Megillah. Anyways, but that's a little bit, so that's a little bit why our Hallel calendar works. But, it's in Masechet Erchin because it's the days that they sang the flutes in the temple were the days that we say Hallel. And that, of course, not on Hanukkah. There's no Hanukkah in the temple. I mean, there was Chanukah in the temple, but there, we don't do anything because it's a post, biblical holiday, but that's what Chanukah was about, to reestablish the temple. It's kind of interesting, right? Chanukah was reestablishing the temple, but we don't have any sacrifices. We don't Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Did the Jews bring a korban totem? Actually, I don't know. I'm thinking out loud, right? We can bring a Thanksgiving offering whenever we want, whenever we have something to be thankful for. So you would think maybe every year on Kafei Kislev, maybe they baked instead. You know, why don't we bring a korban totem? We have people, I don't know, I think it'd be a nice thing to do. There's no obligatory korbanot, obviously, because the Torah is, you know, has been, there's no, you can't add to the laws of the Torah. Okay, that's, any questions? We can move on. Let's try to finish up the korban tami, just a few little comments of korban tami, and then I want to begin, at least I hope I can begin, with Eid Nekoman. Okay, so we say the Korban Tami, as I mentioned last week, according to some Rishonim, this is a biblical mitzvah, maybe the only part of the Siddur that's a biblical mitzvah to say. So, because as we've discussed many times, and other people discussed, and Tami Chagowitz mentioned it last night, when you say Korbanos, as if you're bringing it, as if it's considered the fulfillment of the mitzvah. We discussed that a couple of weeks ago. So there's something very important, apparently, of saying the Korbanos. Why so many places skip it? No, that has to do with our attitude towards korban in general. We don't relate to it. Whatever it is, that's you know, I remember Rav Shecht used to tell us how what the Gemara we discussed, I think 3 weeks ago, that's the schut to Eretz Yisrael, that God, that's what God told Abraham. How do I know I'll inherit the land? And God said, when you bring korbanah. So Abraham said, that's great when there's a Bein HaMikdash, when there's no Bein HaMikdash, it's okay. Just you say the korbanah, it's the same thing. But the korbanah is the schut to Eretz Yisrael. So I remember Shecht with us, those old men in shul, you know, who come to shul early and say all the korbanah. So I guess in Europe, maybe they said it more. I guess it's the American, you know, quickly just go to Rabbi Shmuel Amir. Anyways, whatever it is. Okay. So we discussed last week part of it, or most of it, just that, just a couple. Tzavim Nei Seov Amar Talema Korban Ilach Milishai. So what's Korban Ilach Milishai? So just Rashi, look in Rashi in the Chumash. So, first of all, Korbani, what's the Korban? The main part of Korban is the blood. I mean, so I don't want to get all gory, but the main part of the korban is sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach. That's more important than putting anything on the altar. That's what a korban means. And if you learn Masechet Zvachim, it's like unbelievable. Like, if the blood is sprinkled, there's the chud hasikra. There's a sort of a line going halfway up the height of the altar. And up and two and four on every corner, on one corner, on two. It's so, you look at it like, who cares, right? I mean, that's what we would think. But the Torah is so regimented. That's because the difference between the prophet and the priest. I think I mentioned Norman Lamb's phenomenal talk about the difference between the prophet and the priest, right? The prophet is full of fire and, you know, and excitement. And, you know, does his own thing. The priest has to be so precise. You do one wrong thing, like Nadav and Abihu, you get killed. Like it's Jonathan Sachs talks about in his introduction to the Siddur, right? We've mentioned this a number of times. We mentioned that Keneged Kulam, the Korbanot and Tefillah are the two opposites. Korbanot are regimented. Tefillah's service of the heart is so different. So it's so, you know, we find that, I think, hard to relate to, the precision which the Korbanot have to bring. But the main aspect of the Korban is sprinkling of the blood, and there are very detailed rules of how to sprinkle that blood. We, on Yom Kippur, you know, back and forth. And then he went here and he poured the blood there, and then the blood would go out this way and that way. Very, very detailed of how they would through the blood. And then Lachmi, Korbanit, the lechem, the food. So that's the limbs you put on the altar. I don't want to say you're feeding God, but that's a korbani. The korban, the way, is sprinkling on the blood. Lachmi, lechem, the food, that's putting on the limbs. That's how Rashi explains. And reich nichoch. So we spoke about reich nichoch a few weeks ago. Smell tells us what will be. It's anticipation. You bring the korban, you're going to be better. Some point out from the word nachat, really. That's interesting. I don't know if that's true linguistically. I don't know Hebrew well enough. But nichoach and nachat, people tell me, is connected, that it brings nachat. It brings peace and contentment, both to God, I guess, that we're fulfilling his command, and maybe to the Jewish people. Now, tishmeru, guard it. So this is, believe it or not, this is what the Mefarshim say, commentaries say, this is the origin of the Mishmarot. We know that the Kohanim and the Israelim were divided into 24 Mishmarot. The number 24 is a convention. And the Mishnah said they used to have originally 8, then I think they went to 16 or 12, and then they went to 24. Just has to do with how many numbers they need. Like how do you get everybody a turn? There's no specific number. But a Mishmar, you have to have... Remember, the Korban Tamid is brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people. So we also discussed the Ma'amadot. So everybody's divided into groups. So the Korban has to be watched. It's there are people representing us who bring the Korban, but they're bringing it on our behalf. Lakrivli b'mo'ado. What does b'mo'ado mean? Not that it's a moed, right? What is b'mo'ado?
In its time.
In its time. So what does that mean? Obviously, I bring it in its time. What is the Torah adding with the word b'mo'ado?
It has to be brought a certain time.
No, that you can bring it even on Shabbos. Now, that's how the Gemara interprets. Yeah, yes, it does have to be brought at a certain time. Of course, that is the fourth parak in Brachot, even Tfilat HaShachar at Arba Shaot, whatever. Yes, but the Moado, the Gemara interprets even like it's so important to bring it at its proper time, even on Shabbat. And of course, this is why Hillel became the Nasi, right? Because of this word, the Moado. Because the Gemara in Psachim said that one year, I guess the Beit Din would try to avoid it. Now we had it last year when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos. You know, we can go like, I think it's happening in a few years. That's usually what happened. We don't have it for 20 years and then we get it like, you know, next to each other. Like, right? That's the way the calendar works, the quirks of the calendar. So, b'mo'ado. So they didn't know it was in the temple. And Erev Pesach was on Shabbos and they're hanging around and nobody knows. Are they allowed to bring the Korban? That's an amazing thing. Can you imagine? Nobody knew. The rabbis didn't know if you were allowed to bring the Korban Pesach on Shabbos. Why not? Why wouldn't you bring the Korban Pesach? Because the Korban Pesach is an individual Korban. It's not communal. Everybody brings the Korban Pesach. So you bring it for 50 people. Everybody, it's not, so the Korban, these Korban, it's one Korban. It's one Kevis for the entire nation. Not like everybody brings a sheep. We bring two, one, and seven. That's it. Two, one, and seven for the entire people. Korban Pesach, everybody brings Korban Pesach. You're not allowed to bring an individual sacrifice on Shabbos. No, but it's sort of a Korban Sibur. It's for the community. So they didn't know what to do. So until Hillel came from Bavel. That's Hillel. He didn't, wasn't a native. The student of Shmaya Naftalion, that's who I see. So who did we look in prayer care of what? And he said, it says b'mo'ado. He learned from his teachers. I think he quotes it to Shmaya Naftalion. It says b'mo'ado by Pesach. And it says b'mo'ado by Korban Tamid. Mo'ado in its proper time. The same way mo'ado means even on Shabbos by the Korban Tamid. So even for the Korban Pesach, is brought on Shabbos. That's what we call the Gzeirah Shavah, which hopefully we'll get to in a couple of weeks when Rabbi Yishmael Omer, the 13 principles, literary analysis, very common today. Maybe back in the time of Gemara was unusual. Today, we're very into that in all the way we read literature. We look for common phrases and literary analysis. So you have the same word, b'mo'ado, b'mo'ado. And Hillel said, therefore we can bring the Quran. So they thanked Hillel. Then Hillel got upset at the people. You, Amar, why didn't you pay attention to your teachers? What do you mean you don't know? What were you doing? And anyways, they appoint Hillel as the Nasi of the Jewish people. That's what the Gemara says. That's what we get. The Gemara in Psachim. That's how Hillel gets appointed. From the word b'mo'ado, it has to be. Okay. Okay, so just very quickly, why do we bring a sheep as the Korban Tamid?
Doesn't it say a keves echad?
Yeah, no, I know that's what it says. Yes, of course, I'm asking you, right? So you're giving a very firm answer because it says so in the Torah. Why do we do anything? It says that's true. That's the firm answer. But what's the meaning behind the Torah, right? That's Tamei HaMitzvot, right? So we have a tradition, almost everybody accepts. It gives much greater meaning. Why did the Torah, there's almost nobody. There wasn't a time of the Talmud, there were people who were opposed to Tamei HaMitzvot. Even in the Middle Ages today, I don't think there's anybody opposed to that idea. And of course, the Gemara does it all the time. The Rambam, all the time, whole Sefer HaChinuch's about that. I mean, anyways, why a sheep? Yeah, it says so in the Torah. Great. What's the symbolism of a sheep?
Remember, obedience. Shivak Fasim and Beersheba?
Could be.
Shivak Fasim and
Beersheba. Okay.
We are God's sheep.
The Akedah, we are God's sheep. So what does that mean? We're God's sheep, right? That's the way I was going. The Shivak Basim Avram could be. Yeah, very good. We are, a sheep is an obedient animal.
But
They go, you know, like sheep to the slaughter, you know, like we go like sheep. Sheep just follow their master. They don't ask any questions. They're easy. You know, one shepherd can take 100 sheep. He puts them in the flock. So the Jewish people are supposed to be like sheep when it comes. I mean, I know maybe we don't like that. It has very negative connotations, I think, in our generation. But we're supposed to have an obedience to God that is very important. So that's what most of the Mefarshim explain. I think that's the idea of a sheep.
Are kevis and tzon the same thing?
So kevis is a form of tzon. Bakar is cattle, like mina bakar. So tzon would include kvasim, izim, or tzmina tzon. And bakar would include karim and, different. So bakar and tzon are the main categories. And then the animal is either from bakar or from tzon. So the korban pesach can only be in tzon. You look, open up the chumash. Parshat HaShavua. Tomorrow morning, right? So open up Vayikra. How does Vayikra begin?
So an
aisle
is what?
Ram.
But where does it fall into? Tzon or bakar?
So let's take a look. Pasuk 10, this week's parsha. Mimin atzon korbano. If your korban is from tzon, min hakfasim o min haizim leola. Right? Zachar tamim yakriveno. So you see kfasim and izim are tzon. Doesn't say ayil. Now, it probably does say ayil somewhere, and I don't know Chumash well enough. Probably says it black and white. I'm as guilty as everybody else. Mimola korbano zachar tamim. Right, so it says, and then it says, imina off korbano. If it's from an off, that's then being dove or turtle doves, whatever. But where is imin hak, ominatson korbano, right? Where's min habakar? I don't know. Veshachadet ben abakar livnei
Hashem. Maybe Shulamim.
Earlier, Veshachadet ben abakar. It doesn't say what the ben abakar is. Right? Is an ayil a bakar a tzon? I don't know. I should know. I apologize. I'm assuming it's a bakar, but I don't know for sure. Maybe it's its own category. I don't know. I don't know. Im zevach shlamim korbano imin habakar imin hazachar nekeva yikre samach yado. Whatever. Okay. That's, in Kevis, yeah. All right, I'll have to look more. I apologize for that. But yes,
Korban Yachid.
I'm sorry?
Maybe an Ayel was not brought as a Korban Yachid. Is that possible?
Anything is possible. I don't know. I apologize for my Amaratsis here. Is an Ayel ever brought as a Korban Yachid? That's very interesting. I don't know. I'm sure it's somewhere and maybe it's obvious. I don't recall. I haven't learned for a while. I went through the Mishnayos, Vafim and Achlat. I don't recall. There's certain, there are certain, the Korban Pesach of Yizachar, certain Korbanon have to be from certain animals, the Korban Chatat. Can you bring a Korban Ayil as a Korban? I don't know. I just have to look. I'm sorry. Anyways, but.
Excuse me, Rabbi Kalman.
Yes.
Izim are goats, correct?
Izim are goats, yes.
Right, so this means that the Torah considers a goat a type. Well, because tzon, usually we translate it as sheep.
Right.
So the Torah doesn't consider a goat a type of sheep?
So I'm going to explain my real ignorance. I don't know the difference between a lamb and a sheep and all these animals that I should know, that if you live on a farm, and what's a male goat and a female goat, right? All these things, an ewe, a ewe. And that's a ram. And a,
well, scientifically, goats are a different animal than sheep. Right, an ayil is a male sheep. A kevis is a female sheep. That I understand. But
right, so an ayil is considered a ram, right? A ram. That's
and right. So that is a male sheep, right? It means a sheep with horns. And a kevis is the mother sheep. But it's interesting that goats, which I think, in the real world, quote unquote, whichever we call the real world, that a goat is really a different animal. So it's interesting that in the Torah it's considered.
It's part of it.
Subservient to the overall.
Goat has a beard, no? That doesn't.
Right, exactly. I mean, I guess you could call them.
A goatee. I guess that's why we call it a goatee beard. Yeah, that's where it comes from.
Goats, sheep, and cows are really three different types of animals. So it's interesting.
Right. Now, the Korban Pesach has to be a lamb, has to be under like a year, they're different Korban, different age groups. Again, the Torah is so specific on how. Right. How old they have to be, but we have to learn Parshat Vayikra a little bit better and see, right? That's where most of these are, Vayikra and stuff. Okay. Thank you. Okay, just that's just one more point where we have to wrap up. So sheep are obedient. They're also weak, and that's sort of Klal Yisrael a little bit. We need the slaughter, like sheep to the slaughter. So sheep, hold on. Sheep are vulnerable and weak, and kind of like Klal Yisrael without God's protection. So I think that's the idea of the it's not a coincidence. And of course, a par is a strong animal. You know, when we bring Shnei Parim, we bring on Sukkot, the par, you know, is a very strong animal. The animals, I know Rav Hirsch talks about this a lot. I mean, he is on and on. The symbolism about, you know, everything, the Mishkan and the Korbanot. He's written a lot about that. Rav Hirsch, a lot of the Mefarshim write about it. But anyways, that's just a little bit on the sheep. Just very, very quickly. Then what do we say? Okay, every day. One in the morning, one in the evening. And by the way, I guess, the one in the morning, one in the evening, that was the day of the Beit HaMikdash. The first thing you did in the Beit HaMikdash, or the first thing Korban was brought in with the Korban Tamid in the morning, they used to bring in at Amud HaShachar. The Mishnah, they used to go out and see when the little things of darkness, where the little light is beginning to shine, then they would get prepared for the Korban Tamid Shel Shachar we discussed on the Trumat Hadeshen a couple of weeks ago, cleaning up the altar. That'd be like at 3 a.m. because they had to get it ready for dawn, way before sunrise. So then, and you know, in Israel especially, it's even earlier, I think, than here. I don't know from daylight saving time back then, they didn't have any clocks. Everything was based on the sun, but it was early in the morning. People got up early in the morning. I imagine they didn't go to bed at 8 o'clock. They went to bed when the sun went down. I don't know. But anyways, so that was the first thing. And the last thing you could bring in the Beit HaMikdash closed early. Banker's hours. They had banker's hours. So it closed with the Korban Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim, which was brought at 3:30 in the afternoon on a perfect day, what we call it. If the day goes from 6 to 6, Sha'ot Zmaniyot, so then Kriyat Shema has to be said by 9 in the morning, a quarter of the day, Tefillah, Davening has to be said by 10 in the morning, 12:30, 6.5 hours is the earliest time to bring the Korban Mincha in the afternoon, which they would bring on Friday on Erev Pesach only. And then the normal, it would take an hour to prepare it. That's what Gemara says. It started at 12:30, bring it at 1:30, and then 3:30. That's what we call Mincha Gdola at 12:30 and Mincha Ktana. Mincha Ktana is at 3:30, 9.5 hours. It's not necessarily 3:30, but on a perfect day, 9.5 out of 12 hours, a little bit more than 3/4 of the day. That's when they brought the Korban Tamid. Aleha Hashleim Kola Korbanot Kulam. When you say if you say the full Korbanot, you'll say when they have the order, Aleha Hashleim, on the Korban Tamid, that's you finish. The Beit HaMikdash closes no later than 3:30 in the afternoon. Closes with one exception, Erev Pesach. The only exception, they would bring the Korban Pesach has many exceptions to all these rules. Nothing went on the altar. None of the meat of the Korban Pesach went on the altar. The Kohanim didn't get any of it. It was a very different Korban. And the whole purpose was different. And everybody brought it. It's like a totally unusual Korban. But it was the defining Korban of the Jewish people that made us into a Jewish people. So the only Korban that was ever allowed to be brought after the Korban Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim was the Korban Pesach and Erev Pesach and the fifth Perek of Psachim, half of Masechet Psachim on the Korban Pesach. Only the 10th Perek talks about the Seder. The first 4 Prakim talk about Bedikat Chametz and Pesach in the morning, getting rid of your Chametz and what defines Chametz. So that's the first 3 chapters. The 4 chapters on Minhagim, I mean, it's another Kovitz, another tangent. The Mishnah says in the place where the minhag is not to work on Erev Pesach in the morning, can't work. And then the Mishnah lists off 15 other things depending on minhag. Do you like candles on Yom Kippur night? We're not going to eat. Maybe we don't need candles Yom Kippur night. That depends on minhag. Do you work on Tisha B'Av? That depends on minhag. Eating roasted meat on Pesach night depends on minhag. All the lists off 15 minhagim there, most of which have nothing to do with Pesach. And then the 5th of the 9th Perek talk about the Korban Pesach. And then the 10th Perek talks about the Seder. But anyways, that's the Korban Pesach. It brought the last thing. Okay, we'll continue, please God, next week. I was going to talk about, what was the verse I was going to say about Hasuya Bahar Sinai. That's where we'll pick up. what do we Hasuya Bahar Sinai? The Korban Tamid that was made on Har Sinai. So we'll discuss that. Well, that's what we'll pick up, please God, next week. So just to very quickly review, we discussed why Rosh Chodesh is a woman's holiday, perhaps based on the faith of the woman, the timing of the woman, right? The sensitivity to time, the miscalculation of time, but whatever it is, it's a result, it's a reward for Cheta Egel, but then we have to figure out what the connection between Cheta Egel and women's holiday is. And then we spent a fair bit of time discussing Hallel and what the conditions to say Hallel or what it's doing in the middle of nowhere in the Masechet Erchin. Like many things, there's so often how the Gemara works. That's why Daf Yomi is so fascinating. You go from one subject to the next. Like, how did you get here? I was just talking about this and all of a sudden I'm talking about that. So that's it's word association. Remember, people memorized it. Even when the Mishnah was written, it wasn't written. That most scholars feel the that the Mishnah was not used as a written text until much later. First of all, who could afford it? Even if it was available, people didn't have it. People learned the Mishnah by heart for hundreds of years. So when you're doing word associations, that's a very common technique. The biggest one is in the second Megillah. By Purim, Ein Bein Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni, El Mikra Megillah, we spoke about last week. There's no difference between the two Adarim, except reading the Megillah. That was last week's shir, a fair bit. And then the Mishnah lists up, I think, 12 more Ein Beins. Ein Bein Shabbos the Yontav, Ein Bein Shabbos the Yom Kippur, Ein Bein the Darim Belin Daba, Ein Bein Shiloh Yerushalayim, Ein Bein Tefillin Usfarim Umasuzah, the famous Ein Beins, all the Ein Beins. There's no difference less except for one thing. And the Mishnah just bang, a whole bunch of things. That was a very common technique, which makes a lot of sense if you're talking about a body of literature that you had to put to memory. So that's what it's doing in Erchin. And then Hallel is connected to Korbanot. That's the unbelievable thing you say. We don't think about it. That's why on Sukkot we have Hallel every day, but we don't on Pesach. Korban and Hallel are different forms of getting close to God. Through sing and joy, spontaneity. Again, these two models. The regiment of Korban and the spontaneity of song. I mean, song is so, and as Yeshir Moshe, they burst out in song, right? That's the total opposite. These are two ways to get close to God, and therefore they go together. Hallel and Korbanot go together, and then a whole discussion. Why not on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and why on Hanukkah, and of course, why on Purim, and why not on Purim, and three different reasons that give three totally different understandings. Purim is, a holiday, but not so much to celebrate. It happened in Chutzlar, so it's a little holiday. And Purim is an unbelievable holiday. We make its own book. Wow. A special hallel. It gets its own. We're not going to say the hallel book or the other holidays. No, we say a special hallel. And then we're going to say Purim's absolutely nothing. We started with slaves of Achashverosh, and now we're still slaves of Achashverosh. Three totally different understandings of how Purim works. And then.
Kelman?
Yes.
I was thinking of a way one could connect those three answers.
Sure.
Because really Purim, I think, symbolizes the Galut type of holiday, the Hester Panim that we have to, you know, it's not a Nes Goli. We have to read between the lines, so to speak.
100%.
So the answer that it's not in Eretz Yisrael, it happened in Chutz La'aretz, that is part of our reality that today in Golos, that we have to look for the Nisim, but not even in Eretz Yisrael. You know, there could be a salvation off the land. And the same thing with, it's not a total Geula, you know, from Achashverosh. Yes, we're still subject to him, but we still, like, let's say here in America or wherever we are, we still need to find the Nisim, but we have to look harder. And therefore, right.
It's harder to find God in Chutzlaretz. That's a very basic Torah idea. Yeah. God is close. God is close with us. That ain't, it's a pasuk in the Chumash. It's not even the rabbis. And the next pasuk is Vayam Shemoa Tishmoa Mitzvotai, which is our claim to the land of Israel. Vayam Shemoa, Hisham Rulachem or not. So God, the pasuk before that is that God's eyes are focused on Israel. Israel, we see God much easier. Yeah.
So maybe the fact that we say the Megillah instead of Hallel symbolizes both ideas that in Chutz La'aretz, you know, in or before we are redeemed totally, you know, we have the Megillah, Hashem's name is not even in it. So the whole point of the holiday is that we have to somehow find God wherever we are under.
100%. That's what Purim is all about.
Okay,
God is hidden.
In a way, maybe these three answers are not necessarily one contradicting the other, but they're all adding up to that same.
Okay. Okay, yeah. You could say that, right? Right. And yeah, okay. But I think on the surface, they really do represent, for sure, the emphasis of each one is very, very different, even if they are connected. And of course, okay. The most famous one, maybe because I went to Zionist like schools. I don't know what they teach in the non-Zionist schools, but the famous answer I was always taught was, of course, because it happened in Chutz Laaretz. But it, you know, if you're Zionist, non-Zionist, has nothing to do with that. So this is what our Torah says, you know, that only in Eretz Yisrael are we a community. That really is true. There are a lot of halakhic implications for that. That's why a Sanhedrin can only be in the land of Israel. That's why Kiddush HaChodesh, talking about Rosh Chodesh, sanctifying the moon, can only take place in the land of Israel. There's Israel is Kimitzion Teitzei Torah, Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Okay, so we spoke about Hallel, and then we just did a little bit on the Korban Tamid, and we exposed some of the things I have to look into much more, and what the aisle is, but the sheaf represents obedience and vulnerability, and that's our relationship to God, and of course the different aspects of the Korban, the blood, this is the main aspect really of what makes the Korban, and then the Korbani Lachmi, and then it's B'moado, it's got to be in its proper time, which become, of course, hourly, etc. But that means even on Shabbat, it's so important. It'll rush, but maybe next week we can discuss the question. I don't know, maybe we won't. You'll tell me if we want to discuss the question. Why, what we can't do on Shabbos is what they did in the Mishkan, right? Right? Are the laws of Shabbat are derived from the Mishkan. So how come the Mishkan was allowed to operate on Shabbos? The Mishkan shouldn't operate on Shabbos. In other words, that's the place the most shouldn't operate on Shabbos. So we learn Hilchot Shabbos from Mishkan. I don't know if you think that's a worthy question. I'm happy to spend a few minutes to discuss that issue. And, okay. Tishmaru, even the 24 Mishmarot that were divided into is also part of, it's sort of alluded to in the Chumash itself. Okay, thank you very much. We look forward to learning with you next week and beginning on Sunday. Rabbi Liebtag, as always, invite a friend. Next week, of course, is Purim. It should be Simcha V'Sason Lehudim Kein Tiyalan Lehudim Or, what have you say, Orav Simcha Sason V'Yikar. And then we add Kein Tiyalenu. The Kein Tiyalenu, of course, is not in the Megillah, but when we say Havdalah this week, we should be zocheh that we shouldn't be Avdei the Achashverosh or anybody else, that we should have the Gula. Purim is a very special holiday, and we should enjoy it. And as I mentioned last night, for better or for worse, everybody's invited. Next Thursday night, Parshat HaShavua, 8:30. That's like an hour and a half after Purim ends. I know we changed the clock here, whatever. It's an hour. So I'll be giving the Parshat HaShavua shir, because as I said, I have Rachmanis on my guest speakers, and I don't want to ask anybody to speak on Purim, but I don't want to cancel Torah on Purim. Purim is about Kabbalat HaTorah. It's not even Purim, it's after Purim. But we know that Purim, the way Chazal understood it, there was a reacceptance of Torah. So that's, everybody is invited if you want to come, hopefully on Thursday night at 8:30. We will have a Parshat HaShavua shiur, and I'll be giving it. But Wednesday night, Dr. Sokolo, and Thursday morning, you know, Shuli's wonderful shiur that everybody loves, will not happen on Purim. That we will take a rain check on. And yes, I see that in the comments. I have asked Yoni Grossman to give a shiur a brief, but it hasn't happened. Okay, what can I tell you? Sheep have their positive connotation, arouse our empathy and care. Oh, that's very good. Thank you. You're right. Sheep arouse our empathy and care. That's good. I didn't think of that, but 100%. I raise sheep. Oh, maybe. Okay. God is the first Zionist. Okay. Yes, that is true. God is the first Zionist. You see if there's anything else I missed here. Sheep are obedient. Yeah, that's what we discussed. Just like Congress. Okay. We'll leave that for you to decide. They can and do survive without shepherds. Yeah, some people. Can we get Yoni Grossman on? Yeah, I'd like to. Okay, everybody. Be well. Shabbat shalom. Thank you very much.